The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly, and Richmond Graduate University can equip you with everything you need as a licensed professional counselor while integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmont.edu. That's richmont.edu.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells,
about residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there,
and the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle, stories about life on the inside told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
Did someone say summer vacation? Around here, politics will not take a stinking summer vacation. From a governor who faced loud booing from a faction of his own party to a former Atlanta mayor who wants the job again, it's already a hot summer with no vacation from politics. And we'll take the temperature in this edition of The Political Breakfast. Thanks for keeping us company. Great to have you along. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Our regulars are back, Republican strategist Brian Robinson and Democratic strategist Theron Johnson. Welcome to you both.
Thanks, Dennis.
Good to be back.
Well, in normal times, a state party convention here in Georgia would mostly be of interest to the folks in that party. A big show of unity, a chance to rally the rank and file members for campaigns ahead. But these are not normal times, and the recent Republican state convention featured efforts to end the divisions that have shown up over the last 4 years, and also to decide, who are we? Where do we want to go? Not the usual questions for a party that's been in power statewide for almost 20 years, and also won elections up and down the ballot in 2020, except the three biggest ones. When he gave his speech, Governor Kemp had to make himself heard over a chorus of boos from some in the audience who are still angry over his refusal to intervene to overturn Joe Biden's Georgia victory in the 2020 presidential election. Afterward, the governor spoke with our WABE colleague, Emma Hurt, and he told her he had a chance to speak to some of the folks who were hollering and booing at him. And he said it gave him a chance to push back on what he called were the lies that they had been told. He didn't say what those were, but then he talked about the way forward as he and the GOP face next year's campaigns for state offices, including his.
I think Republicans, if they learned any lesson in the last election, is we need to tell Georgians what we're for. You know, remind them of what we've done. But tell them what we stand for and where we want to go. And that's very different from where the Democrats want to take us in today's politics.
Okay, Brian, you said almost exactly the same thing in our last podcast. Governor Kemp told Emma Hurt, though, it's the Democrats who have portrayed the Republicans as the party that just is against things. But Brian, if you're really trying to convince voters that you are the party of the future, how much good does it do for many of your leaders, not the governor necessarily, but others, to insist on continuing to fight the results of the past presidential election that your party lost and send party leaders to that so-called audit in Arizona in hopes of staging something like that here?
Republicans can win. Now, it is my belief that they can only win at this juncture, in this context, with Brian Kemp at the top of the ticket. That is my firm belief. If we were to throw him out in a primary, one that would get national attention, it would be on the message that he didn't stop the steal, that he didn't do enough to rescind our electoral votes and switch them back to Donald Trump. He didn't call a special session to do that back during the transition. Now, I think probably what he was telling those people at the convention who were booing him, Dennis, the lies that they were told, what he has said on that is, I am not authorized under our Constitution to do what they were asking me to do. It is not within my purview to change our electoral votes or to call a special session for that reason. So I think that's part of the messaging. He's never spoken too much about those issues. And in fact, he's been extremely disciplined in his messaging on it. And that is why, despite the onslaught from former President Trump, an onslaught that very few Republicans over the last 5 years in this entire country have survived, that is why Brian Kemp is still standing and, in fact, has very strong numbers with the Republican primary electorate. It was, by the end of it, everybody was saying about a 70-30 split pro-Kemp folks. And I can tell you that in the convention itself, the pro-Kemp split was even higher for Kemp. I mean, he in the hallways, in the receptions, people were getting selfies, posting them on social media, and getting behind him. And these aren't like squishy moderates. These are hardcore right-wing Republicans who are posting photos with Brian Kemp. So his strategy of staying in this lane, he's not going to go out of his way to attack Donald Trump. He doesn't want to talk about those things. And he focuses on his message. And he's right. We did talk about this and what he said in that quote.
Yeah, now that's the governor. What about the rest of the party, where you still have people, including the party chair, who are looking at going back and contesting the election?
Yeah, they're certainly playing to a segment of the party that's very real and that is influential. And, you know, obviously the numbers, if you poll, are still very high, just as the numbers amongst Democrats were very high in that 2018 election was stolen. It's certainly true for the Republicans as well, and they are playing to that audience.
But is that a winning strategy for 2020?
I think I've been very clear it's not a winning strategy. I don't think that I have ever wavered on that since November of 2020. If we don't start talking about what we've done for Georgians, which is a great record, I mean, a fantastic record that I would be proud to run on any day of the week. And if we don't present a vision for the future and show how it contrasts with the post-apocalyptic future that awaits us if the Democrats get elected, you know, that's how this will play out, then we have a strong chance of losing. We know what happens if you run on Stop the Steal. We had a trial run on January the 5th with the Senate runoff, and Republicans suffered the worst loss in a statewide election since the days of Democratic dominance. It was a rebuke of that. And also, the other reason why that happened wasn't just because we lost the middle with an argument they didn't believe. We told our people their votes didn't count. And so many of them in the most hardcore Republican areas didn't show up. It is a recipe for loss.
You know, Dennis, that sound you just heard is me sipping my freshly squeezed lemonade this morning. Because if we were in studio right now, Brian could actually see me sitting back in my chair and just kind of saying, I told you so. The one thing that I think we always got to remember, Dennis, and I know it's hard for you and it's hard for me sometimes too, but Democrats are actually winning in this state. All right. We elected two U.S. senators and we turned blue and we sent our electoral votes to the Biden-Harris ticket. And he's now the president and she's now the vice president. So when you start from that premise, we really don't have anything to defend because we know how to win in Georgia. We know how to build the right coalition of voters that does include disaffected Republican, college-educated, suburban white women, independent white men who have left the party that Brian still belongs to. And we are going to only increase our turnout with people of color in this state because we've been talking about on this podcast for almost 6 years, the demographic shift that's occurring. So what we got to do as Democrats is that we cannot feed into the conspiracy theories that the Republicans are going to tell their base and they want to tell the voters in Georgia. We've got to roll up our sleeves and we got to continue working. And that's what you should expect from Democratic leadership, not just in the metro area, but from all across the state. However, Dennis, I know where you're going because I know you're going to ask me a follow-up question. You know, we do have a lot going on in Washington right now where there is a lot of articles being written about how the Democratic Party needs to make a move to the center. And I agree with that. But we do have a very, very loud, well-funded, progressive wing of our Democratic Party that need to be heard. They should be heard. And we got to make sure we push their policies as well. And I think you've seen that from President Biden. The good news for us going into 2022, Dennis, is that I think we're going to have a very popular president and vice president based on polling numbers in this state. So for everyone who will be on the statewide ballot, we'll have a administration that they will be proud of to be aligned with. So let's get to the Republicans, and I'm going to speak quickly. The reason I know it was going to be total chaos down in South Georgia for the Republican convention, because Governor Kemp and Brian Robinson and others knew that too, and they tried to roll out U.S. Senator David Perdue, which, by the way, I think is still very, very popular, very well respected amongst the Georgia GOP. And many of those people who were booing the governor probably wanted to boo Senator Perdue, and a lot of them probably support him, right? But the convention, I know, is going to be, you know, the circus that it was, is because the Republicans still have not figured out a way to address the fundamental issue. And that is, how do you deal with Trump? How do you deal with the party, 85% of them roughly, still supporting this former president that ultimately fed them a lie? And the one thing that's missing from the governor's talking points and other Republicans, and they do admit that they were told a lie. They do admit that they were told to stop the steal when there was nothing, you know, wrong about the election. There was no proven fraudulent or activity. But they still don't blame Donald Trump for that. And I think that's what's missing. If you want to get elected in a November race in 2022, and you're still scared to tell the truth about former President Donald Trump, then you're not going to win, because all we're going to do is force the candidate, he or she or they, I got to start saying that now for our LGBTQ plus community, these voters are going to see right through that. And so, again, I was not shocked that this convention was full of boos. It was a little louder than what I heard that Brian wanted to describe. I think Senator Perdue introducing the governor was a good strategy, but I also heard that it was kind of like an afterthought. Maybe he was up there kind of talking and said, oh, by the way, I'm here to introduce the governor. But to be fair to the governor, which I am always in this podcast, and Brian can attest to that, I think the governor knew he was walking into a very hostile environment amongst his base. I think he knows that Vernon Jones is a expert at causing, you know, drama in any election that he's in. And I think the fact that he actually stood up there along with his wife and his daughters and persevered and made the speech. And then he did what Brian said. He went out, he worked the crowd. And that's the BK I know that I've known for over 20 years from Athens. And so, but ultimately, I think the problem still exists. You have a former president who is in control of your party, whose numbers are just through the roof as far as being unfavorable. And you still have a moderate electorate out here that I think that the governor and others are trying to appeal to. But quite frankly, Democrats are just doing a better job of giving them something that they can agree with. I am willing to bet that you can take Stacey Abrams, Michael Thurman, Keisha Lance Bottoms, Lucy McBath. The list goes on and on and on. And you put all those individuals and others that I just mentioned, Congresswoman Akima Williams, if they go to our convention, they're not going to get booed. Not right now. I can take that to the bank. I don't think there's one Democratic elected official that will stand up in front of our party right now and get booed. And so that's the difference, Dennis, which kind of segues into what I know you're going to ask me, is that, no, Democrats are united. We are united. This is the most united we've ever been. And the Republicans are the most divided in this state than they ever been. I've never seen the Republican Party in Georgia this divided. I'm so happy you mentioned that former state Senator Schaefer wants to continue to stop the steal, you know, and they got all these candidates who want to run and they can't get any traction because you still have a base of supporters who still support a very unpopular former president.
There's some truth to what Theron is saying here, and I apologize, Dennis, but I think this is the most pertinent thing going on right now. The Democratic State Convention wouldn't be different, and it's because it has an autocrat. It has a dear leader who can gaze over her piranha pond from her throne and tell the piranhas, any of you like leap up with your teeth bared, I will kill you. You will be dead. You will be thrown out of the pond and gasping for oxygen. And she's got that power right now.
You're talking about Stacey Abrams, I presume.
The queen of the Piranapan of the Democratic State Convention. Yes, absolutely.
It will not be that violent, Brian. Don't scare our listeners. It's peaceful.
She's powerful enough to issue death sentences to people's political careers in the Democratic Party right now. She is an absolute power. Here's the deal for Democrats, though, is the day that she says she's not running for governor, the piranha pond over there goes nuts. And that facade of calm and cohesion goes away because they will begin to shred each other's skins after dear leader is gone.
Real quickly, Brian, to Theron's point that the Republicans have a dear leader on their side, former President Trump. So yeah, the question for you is, and again, we have to be real quick here, does he still hold the sway in reality in the Georgia GOP that a lot of Republican leaders think he does?
It's still enough to determine most primaries. And has it diminished somewhat? Yeah, I would say it has. But his numbers with the primary electorate remain very strong. You know, I think what's happening here is we're no longer seeing him every day in our faces. And that impacts everybody. There's no one who is immune to the power of that fact. You know, once you are no longer in people's faces all the time, every day, they begin to move on a little bit. That said, he still is a tremendous power. He is the most important voice, and he is the party leader at this juncture. Over time, though, as is the case with every party leader, that begins to decline. It's just how it is.
Meanwhile, Republicans picked up another candidate for the nomination to challenge new Democratic Senator Raphael Warnock. This one probably the best known among Republicans, Agriculture Commissioner Gary Black. Brian, is Commissioner Black the candidate who could scare off any others who might be thinking about it? And again, we should disclose here, you've done some work for some of the lesser known folks who have already declared.
No, if you're talking about the heavyweight to clear the field, you know, there's no one in the field right now that meets that definition. You've got some great candidates in there, and those were all very well received at the state convention last weekend. All of them were. So we've got folks who are a bit on a level playing field right now, and we will begin to see some of the picture taking shape at the end of this month, which is when the quarterly financial disclosures will come out. And so we'll see who's winning in the money game. And that'll give us some indication of who has some juice, who has some staying power, who might be the one who can break out of this field. Now, Gary Black does have the advantage of having a statewide network. I would imagine he can go anywhere in the state and go to any county, and there's somebody there that's been part of his political operation in the past, somebody can open up doors for grassroots events and for fundraising. That's important, and I don't discount it. And he's got some degree of name ID from having been on statewide office. But whether you're John King, Martin Butler, Richard Woods, Gary Black, you know, these are all down ballot statewide elected officials, our Supreme Court, our appellate court. They do win statewide, but they're not known statewide. So they don't have this immediate advantage where in polling they're winning because people are like, yeah, that name sounds familiar, because the name isn't familiar. So until there's a Kelly Loeffler or a Herschel Walker or someone who has name ID at that level, you can't say that there's a heavyweight involved in there right now. You might say David Ralston meets that threshold, but even the Speaker of the House isn't going to be universally known in the state the way that Herschel Walker is or the way that Brian Kemp is.
And Theron, Gary Black, though, does come from the state's number one industry, agriculture. So he is known around the state, including in areas that you might not think he would be. Do Democrats have to look at him as a potentially serious challenger in areas where Pastor Warnock would not be known himself?
Dennis, I absolutely disagree with Brian, and I know it's going to shock our Democratic listeners that I'm about to really, I think, do a good job of sort of making a case for Gary Black. So let's just start with Gary Black, and then I'll, you know, again, talk about Herschel Walker, who Brian Robinson just loves to mention, who we all know doesn't live in Georgia and is not going to run for U.S. Senate. You can take that to the bank. Herschel will not run for U.S. Senate. I want him to run on the football field again if he can. He looks in great shape, but he's not going to run for U.S. Senate. But here's the thing about Gary Black, right, Dennis? And I've met him a couple of times and talked to him a couple of times. But everyone you talk to about Agriculture Commissioner Gary Black, the one thing that everyone says about him is that he's honorable, he's nice, he's just a good guy, right? And for him to say, you know what, I'm going to run for U.S. Senate, I think he sees something that Brian doesn't see. You know, Brian knows this, and you know, and it's the opposite kind of for Democrats, but we picked up gains. But what do Republicans really get their votes from in Georgia? Brian has talked about it every time, you know, he has an opportunity to talk about the shrinking metro vote for Republicans, right? Gary Black, I would say, is more popular in certain counties than any other Republican elected official in Georgia, in the rural counties, right? And it's also where the governor is strong. But Gary Black, I think, has been talking to these voters. He's been providing food for them. He has been providing resources. I mean, they know him. Now, his challenge is going to be, how do you get votes from the metro counties? But in the rural areas, I think Gary Black is probably the most prominent Republican that a lot of these rural Republicans know. You know, if you look at possibly Kelly Loeffler, I think what Kelly Loeffler is trying to do is this. I think Kelly Loeffler is planning to sit back, raise a lot of money for the organization that she's doing. And if none of these candidates that Brian has mentioned, you know, we have Kelvin King, you got Lathan Sadler, now you have Agriculture Commissioner Gary Black, and it's been mentioned that Congressman Buddy Carter, who represents the southeast portion of Georgia, would love to get in if Herschel Walker doesn't run. But if I'm the Republicans right now, I think Gary Black is a viable option. I don't know why there haven't been more people sort of creating a path for him. And then lastly, I did get a chance to talk to Speaker Ralston this week. I mentioned it on last week's podcast that I didn't want to get in trouble and say anything without speaking to him. And the gist of it is that, yes, he is seriously considering it. I mean, it was a very quick conversation. And the reason he's considering it is that because he's really worried about the lack of coalition building right now amongst the Republicans to try to really figure out a way to win. And I think he really thinks that he could be that person. However, the speaker made it very clear to me, though, that he loves his job as being speaker. He thinks that he had a really good session last year with a lot of things that got passed between him and the lieutenant governor that didn't get a lot of spotlight because of Senate Bill 202.
That's the voting bill, just to clarify.
Correct. He's extremely concerned about making sure that his House caucus members have the support that they need to get reelected, because he knows that there's going to be some tough challenges. And so the gist of what the speaker told me is, yes, I'm considering it. I'm giving it some real thought. However, I love my job. I want my caucus members to know I support them. And a hypothetical situation is, you know, we know there's going to be a new lieutenant governor, whether it's a Democrat or Republican. Let's say that Brian Kemp is not reelected, hypothetically. Then Speaker Ralston becomes the top Republican in the state because he would be the speaker. And I think that, you know, I would love for Democrats to take back the House, and I think we can, but we would need a, you know, need to get lucky and really have a well-oiled machine to do so. So I think he's also considering that, too, because he's one of the last sensible, understanding Republicans out there that's not drinking this Trump Kool-Aid. And he has been very vocal against certain things against the former president that he thought was wrong. And so I think Gary Black could probably pose a problem for Democrats if he were to become the Republican nominee. But based on what I'm hearing and what Brian has said, I think the pathway is pretty difficult for him to get through a Republican primary.
But there is an election coming up first, that in the city of Atlanta. We have a new candidate in the race, a very familiar name, that and more when the Political Breakfast continues. Stay right here.
Support comes from Grady Health Foundation, presenting Move for Grady Saturday, April 27th, featuring a family-friendly bike ride through Atlanta's in-town neighborhoods. There's a ride, run, or walk distance for everyone, benefiting Grady Health System. More at moveforgrady.com.
You love free, and at Ameris Bank, so do we. That's why we're proud to offer worry-free, hassle-free Ameris Bank free checking. Manage your money your way with convenient access to digital, mobile, and telephone banking, all with no monthly service fee or minimum balance requirements. At Ameris Bank, we're with you. For more information or to open an account, visit our local bankers in person or online at amerisbank.com/free checking. Other fees such as overdraft fees may apply. Ameris Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
And we are back on The Political Breakfast. Thank you very much for keeping us company. I'm Dennis O'Hare with Republican strategist Brian Robinson and Democratic strategist Theron Johnson. All right, the city of Atlanta, the mayor's race, got the candidate that everyone has been waiting to hear from. The day after five candidates who want to be Atlanta's next mayor appeared at a forum, the previous mayor said he also wants to succeed the current one. Kasim Reeve filed the paperwork to launch his campaign. Then he held a birthday party slash fundraiser. Theron, you managed Kasim Reeve's last campaign for mayor. You've also told us that you have been seriously considering making a run for the job yourself. First of all, anything you can tell us about those deliberations or whether you've reached a decision?
Yeah, I'm still deliberating. And I think that the race is still wide open. And we'll see what I decide. But as far as former Mayor Kasim Reeve entering the race, no surprise there. You know, I think what's going to be very interesting is to see how the other candidates respond now in the race based on, you know, him entering the race. I would also like to really see, you know, what type of campaign is he going to run. I think we all agree that he should not have a money problem based on having run for mayor twice before. So he comes in with sort of a institutional base of donors and support. But I think the Atlanta now in 2021 is much different than the Atlanta in 2009 and also when he was reelected in 2013. I think that some of the issues are the same, but a lot of the issues in the voter demographics are different. So we'll just have to wait and see how it all pans out.
Brian, let's talk about this just from a pure political strategy point of view. If you're Mayor Reeve, you are obviously the best known candidate in the field so far. That means you might have a really good shot in a wide open general election of making it to the runoff. And once you're in the runoff, if you're Kasim Reeve, you're really formidable. Do you think that's probably what he's thinking here?
I think for every candidate, Dennis, in this race, getting in the runoff is the ultimate strategy. Now, 70% of the time, if you are number one in the first round, you go on to win in the second round. Now, that's not always true. Nathan Deal was second in the 2010 race. David Perdue was second in the 2014 primary. And, of course, Brian Kemp was second in the 2018 primary. So it's not a ironclad rule, but the odds are in your favor if you finish first. And I think he's in really good position right now to do just that, to get the plurality in that first round. And yeah, as you and Theron know, a couple of weekends ago, I was thumbing through Twitter and saw a story about Kasim Reeve talking about, I know how to stop crime. And I tweeted it out because I said, this is exactly the right message, and he gets it. The rest of the woke mob in the field is going to talk about how, you know, the police are the problem and we need to have tea with the gang leaders. We need to defund the police. And Kasim gets it. He gets that's not where the people are. It's certainly not where the Buckhead people are, who are threatening to secede from the city because of the crime issue and taxes. It's not also where the black neighborhoods in a city are. If you go and poll black people, the whole defund the police idea seems insane to them. It doesn't poll well at all. You know, it polls well with white extreme liberals. Kasim gets that, buddy. He is speaking to where the people are. And he is speaking to the issues that they are talking about, that everyone is talking about. Is there anybody not talking about the dude running down West Wesley who got shot for no reason? Now, granted, the guy who shot him was having some kind of psychotic break. It wasn't really a crime for financial gain. Nevertheless, it's part of this storyline in Atlanta where every day there is some new murder victim. And granted, this is outside of the city of Atlanta. I don't want to blame the police there for this, but people are scared right now in Brookhaven on the Peachtree Creek Greenway on Saturday. I think the same day as the West Wesley shooting. A mother with her three-year-old, a mother who, by the way, was 5 months pregnant, was stabbed in the back for no reason, no provocation, just a random act of violence by someone she didn't know, which is what scares us the most, right? Random violent crime. The baby had to be delivered at 5 months of development, now is in the NICU. The mother is recovering. That is the context we're in, and Kasim Reed is speaking to it. I think he's going to have a strategy for how he talks past the federal investigation, how he talks past the ginormous bonuses for his cabinet, how he gets past using the city credit card for luxurious travel. I mean, those are all things he has to deal with, right? Those are serious issues that his opponents are going to raise. And you're going to see his opponents talking about corruption, corruption, corruption. And that is what they have to do at this juncture, because they missed the window to talk about crime. And now Kasim is filling that vacuum.
Yeah, I think to be fair, these many individuals who are running for mayor could be my possible opponent. So I definitely don't want to give them a leg up. But I do think on this podcast, while I'm in my current role, I do have to push back, Brian, to say that I think every candidate who's running for mayor, he or she have actually said some things about crime that they think need to be done, many of whom have criticized the administration. They criticized the former chief and the current chief. And you're right, defund the police vote is going to be a big issue, which I have said many, many times on this show that I do not support. And Brian is right, the majority of people, but particularly voters in Atlanta and particularly Democratic voters, don't support defunding the police. However, we do want to hold police officers accountable. We want police reform. You know, this campaign is about to be crazy. Our listeners, get your popcorn ready. This is going to be one of the most destructive, negative mayoral campaigns that we've ever seen. And one thing to be fair to Kasim, Dennis, as I close, you know, he's attempting to do something that only Maynard Jackson has been able to do. And that is our former mayor, Maynard Jackson, who I believe a lot of people agree was, you know, Atlanta's best mayor. You know, we have some great mayors, but I think all of them will agree that Maynard was just special. You know, he served two terms and came back in 1993 and ran for mayor, but did not seek a second term of that attempt. He just did one term when he returned. And so, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see how the voters are going to respond to that. I believe we need new leadership. We need a new direction. We do need to go forward, not backwards. I've said that for many, many weeks on this podcast. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
And I just want to say that, yeah, I want to agree with Darren that Kasim's not the only one. And I do think that Felicia Moore deserves credit for being the first out the gate, making that a major issue. So heads up and hats off to Felicia Moore.
The problem for the former mayor is that there may be, either during the campaign or during the beginning of who the new administration, whoever wins, there will be several trials resulting from the investigation into his previous administration, including one for his chief financial officer, Jim Beard. Very quickly, Brian, you said the former mayor is going to have to talk past that. Will he be able to?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at what he did about the federal corruption probe, which is still ongoing and could still be, I mean, potentially, we don't know, a buried bomb that he could step on here. We don't know for sure. He goes, after 4 years, officially cut bait, which I think is legit on his part. You know, he's got to move on with his life at some juncture. And at this time, if they haven't indicted him 4 years later, and it's really almost 5 years later, if you look at where this really started, then, yeah, it's been a long time. He needs to be able to move on with his life. But what did he do? When he came out and started hinting he may run, he said, "I'm sorry for what people in my administration did. I didn't know about it. I should have, and I will make sure it doesn't happen again." So he came out the gate framing what he saw as his greatest weakness. Now, that is the greatest. The other ones are serious, but not as serious as multiple people in his administration going to federal prison because of a deep, deep rot within City Hall. It's not going to go away just because he addressed it, but he did hit it. And he's going to have to hit these other things too. I think in those cases, he's got to say, those were mistakes. I have learned from the mistakes that I have made. And that's how he groups them all together. You got to group them all together. I made mistakes. I have learned from them. I'm happy to tell you how I will govern moving forward.
Yeah, I think Brian not only sounds like a campaign staffer for the newly launched campaign, but I mean, he's
no, I just think he's in a strong position.
I mean, dang. I mean, did you go to the party, Brian? I mean, were you there? I wasn't there. for our listeners, you know. No, listen, but I agree with Brian. You can't kind of, you know, just gloss this over. I mean, it's real. Mayor Bottoms talked about how the FBI investigation basically dominated, you know, the first really 2 years of her administration, and that, you know, she had some regrets about not moving faster to kind of get her own people in. But, you know, she didn't know who to trust because a lot of those folks that were still working in that mayor's office, she wasn't sure if they were under investigation or not. And I've said this on the record. A lot of these folks I know personally, they're my friends. I work with them. The majority of folks who worked during the Reid administration did some good things, and they've all moved on, some of them, and got great jobs. But we do have a few folks who made some mistakes, and they've paid for those mistakes. And then, as you mentioned, I mean, some of those top level officials are still being investigated. And so if that investigation heats up and these people are on the stands with this ongoing federal investigation, I mean, that's going to be a tough thing for the former mayor to deal with. But I think there's going to be a couple questions that the voters are going to ask the former mayor, Reid. You know, what did you really know about this criminal activity that was going on in your administration? And what did you do about it? And then I think people are going to really question, like, was it a lack of judgment for people that you had running, you know, departments in your administration? And if you didn't know about it, then why didn't you know about it? Right. And then lastly, you know, people are already saying he wants to fix crime. But, you know, how can you really, you know, fix crime where there was clearly some crimes committed under your administration? And so these are just questions, not this is not me saying this. This is just questions I think that if I was advising the former mayor, where it seems that Brian is, then I think he would have to really be prepared to answer these tough questions, because I think his opponents are going to amplify them. And then lastly, you're right, he did go on this sort of public opinion tour. That's what it was, Brian. I mean, he did apologize, which was something that a lot of us have never really seen the former mayor do publicly.
Right. Yeah.
And so I think that was a key indicator to me that he's been listening to the people who are close to him, saying, you got to show some remorse. You got to show some understanding that this did happen and that it was wrong. And that, you know, you definitely want to be apologetic about it. But again, I just think it's just a long way from being over. I've been involved in two mayor's races. I've run one here. It's just June. Trust me, we have a long way to go.
Yeah, I Theron's absolutely right. And the opponents are going to amplify those charges, which Theron just did there. And that's going to be what we see. And that's the strategy that they need to pursue. Like the guy has some serious negatives that you need to attack and remind people of. At the same time, I think the whole Kasim Reid candidacy is premised on the idea that, and we don't know if it's right or not, if it's a good theory, but the theory of his candidacy is people want a strong arm to come in and bring some calm back to City Hall, good governance, bully pulpit leadership. And I think in their minds, that's how they remember the Reid administration, someone who communicated with the city, someone who led it through what were, in hindsight, really good times for the city and the state, great partnership with the Dill administration that was very good for economic development. People have fond memories of those times. And so Kasim's premise is that they will remember the good times and be willing to overlook those points that his opponents will point out, as Theron said. So that's the premise.
The difference is this. No one is really giving, I think, Mayor Bottoms enough credit. What Brian and I just talked about did happen mostly, you know, I think in the second term of former Mayor Reid. But these stories about corruption and people going to jail and people, you know, doing things that were illegal in the Reid administration, you're not hearing that in the Bottoms administration. I just think we got to give Mayor Bottoms that credit. Not only did she clean up city government, did she not only bring so much transparency to it, you're not seeing that same level of corruption that was going on under the former mayor's administration, under the current mayor's administration. I think we just got to make that point very clear of what Mayor Bottoms has been able to do.
Well, let's talk about the current administration then. The state legislature is getting ready for hearings this summer on the crime problem in the state's capital city. And in an interview with our WABE colleague and Morning Edition host Lisa Ram, House Speaker David Ralston said he has not heard, at least I guess in a substantive way, from Mayor Bottoms, and talked about the options that he and state lawmakers have if they don't get cooperation from City Hall on the hearings.
We have the ability to subpoena information. You know, I would hope that, you know, we wouldn't have to come back in with a report at the end of the year that says that, you know, some of these very important leaders and agencies were missing in action on this issue. I think that'd be a travesty.
Theron, Mayor Bottoms might think, and I'm not speaking for her, but it might occur to her that this is all politically motivated theater. Still, is there any advantage to an Atlanta mayor if she doesn't work with the state legislature here?
I think what we got to make clear here is that while Speaker Ralston does have the political and legal right to express his concerns about public safety, and he can pull together hearings, there is this belief in the city and a lot of folks I've talked to that the state should, you know, focus on the state issues dealing with public safety. Now, you know, the mayor is elected to lead the city, and she has been given that right, and she should have that right to work with her police chief and others to deal with the public safety crisis that we have in the city of Atlanta. So I think from knowing the relationship between the mayor and the speaker, I do believe that very, very soon you will see that collaboration. But just on this premise, I think the mayor had to really point out that you don't see the city intervening with state activities. You know, when stuff is going on with the state, you don't really see her saying, hey, I'm going to go and do all this stuff at the city to get the state to do A, B, and C. However, I do think that what we saw recently in Georgia is that Chief Rodney Bryant did participate in a panel discussion with the governor and others. And I think you had the state patrol and GBI. I do think these hearings that are going to happen, you got to have as many people from the city of Atlanta to participate. And it needs to be a fair audience. You need to prop them up in a way where they can articulate the good, the bad, and definitely the ugly as far as public safety. And then lastly, you know, we saw Chief Rodney Bryant come out this week in Atlanta with a pretty aggressive revised plan to deal with crime in the city. I mean, a lot of people didn't really pay attention to it, but I mean, he is going to strongly crack down on a lot of this criminal activity, and it's a pretty detailed plan that I think he is already implementing. But he just shared it with the public. So I know the speaker's heart is in the right place. I think he had to say something because he was getting a lot of complaints from folks that he know. But I do think, you know, he respects the process, and you got to make sure that at these hearings that the city of Atlanta public safety officials, not just the chief, everyone that's involved, even the county, the sheriff, the DA, these folks should be able to participate in those hearings so everyone can have a full comprehensive vantage point of what's really happening in Atlanta around crime, but also give them an opportunity to present their plan and really hope that the state will support it.
For one, let's just have a team effort on what is a serious issue. I mean, is there going to be political grandstanding on this by all sides? Yes, of course it is, because this is the political issue of the moment in local politics and in state politics. So it gives her an opportunity. And look, I mean, it might be a bit nerve-wracking going into something you see as a setup for a lot of politicians. But she's got talent, as I've said a million times. She's got talent. If she's prepared and ready for the toughest questions, the most pointed questions, then she has a chance to really make her case. If she believes she has a case to make, if she believes she's done a good job, that she's doing everything that she can in this scenario, go tell Georgians. This is your platform. Take advantage of it.
Shifting to a subject we have talked about frequently, COVID-19, and this is as the state continues to completely open up after the governor lifted most of the remaining pandemic restrictions, and the current rates of cases and deaths continue to go down. But now there are a couple of report cards that put the state near the bottom compared to other states on COVID recovery. The consumer finance site WalletHub ranked Georgia 47th overall. Now, that's an overall rating. They broke it down into categories, and Georgia did pretty well on the economic side of the pandemic recovery at 18th. But when it came to the health side, not so good, 48th. Brian, this comes as Georgia's vaccination rates continue to be low, and there are now Georgia cases of the fast-spreading new variant from India. So I'm assuming that this is a ranking that Governor Kemp will not put up there with the Site Selection magazine of Georgia as the number one place to do business.
No, I would be shocked if he tweeted about this, for sure. And look, I don't put any stock in this. I am very pleased as a Georgian with where our state is right now. I appreciate that he kept our economy open, and I think we are reaping the dividends of that wise decision today. You know, you go talk to state legislators, and with the stimulus money that is coming and with the extremely strong tax revenues that are coming in right now in the state, we are in a position where legislators have more money than they know what to do with to some degree. Now, I do hope they would use it to just do a full expansion of Medicaid. I would like to see that because it just makes sense to do it right now when it's free for 2 years under the stimulus bill. But we are in great shape. And I reject any idea. And I don't think that there's any serious data showing that we are statistical outliers when it comes to how many Georgians got sick and died. We seem to be right in the middle of the pack. Now, it may be, you know, small numbers that separate one state from the other, and that's why we're kind of toward the back. But it is ridiculous, in my opinion, to suggest that Georgia is far behind other states coming out of the pandemic when, for people on the ground here, we're in great shape. The economy's so strong, we can't get enough workers. That's where we are right now.
Brian, that's the case the governor will make. But real quickly, before we get to Theron, certainly Democrats will point to rankings like this in the upcoming campaign and saying, look, OK, you might have kept the economy open, but it came at a cost. And that cost was health care to Georgians.
Hey, no one believes more in attack politics than I do. But the thing about political attacks in TV commercials or in rhetoric is they've got to be realistic and believable to your audience. I don't believe this attack is believable to Georgians.
Dennis, what's very disappointing is that these numbers are out there. And Brian has sort of made a case that these numbers may not be true. But what we have seen is that they've been consistent. These rankings have been consistent, that we have been near the bottom as far as the vaccines. But on a more positive note, vaccines work, period. And the more we encourage and educate people about the vaccines, the faster our lives will go back to normal and our families will be safe from this virus. You know, I understand that there's a feeling out there where folks are kind of concerned about this vaccine. But I think when I checked this week in Georgia, we're still less than 40%. I think we're hovering around maybe 37-38% of all Georgians who've only received the vaccine. And I just think that, you know, we got to trust the science. The message here is that everyone just needs to get vaccinated. It's not about you. It's about others. And like Brian, I'm sure, you know, I'm shocked, Dennis, that the people I talk to, these are professionals. Like, these are folks who, you know, they've been out since the pandemic started. And when I ask that simple question, like, have you got your vaccine shot? And they say, no. I mean, I have this sort of sticker shock reaction. Like, well, dude, you know, you're playing. And most of them honestly have been, you know, the males that I've been around. I mean, I don't, you know as many females that haven't gotten it. And I would love to see the gender breakdown. Brian, I don't know if you know those stats are out there, the gender breakdown of people who have not received their vaccine shots. And so, you know, again, that's really kind of my message.
Real quickly, though, because our time is very short, do you expect Democrats are going to say to the governor in a reelection campaign, look, there was a cost to all of this happy talk about the economy that you're bringing.
Democrats have got to be careful about what we say about that, because while we do know that lives were lost, and there is a feeling out there that the governor could have done more, and whoever runs against him will be able to point that out, what they think that he could have done more of. But the fact remains that the economy is getting better. But to your point, Dennis, the governor's got to be able to explain that what was the risk of prioritizing the economy over lives that were lost. And then at a time where we continuously see these rankings being near the bottom and people still are not getting their vaccine shots, when we literally opened up locations all across the state and there was this messaging around it, I think therein lies the opportunity for the Democrats to push the governor on that. But we got to be careful that we don't get too far out there where, you know, we lose the middle and a lot of our supporters who do want to be able to have the opportunity to go outside and to work and provide food for their families. And so I do think it'll be a big issue, but I think we got to be very careful in the messaging to not lose voters by attacking the governor too hard. But the attacks will come. Yes.
And finally, we come back to a much lighter subject, one that we talked about last week. The Atlanta Hawks made it past the first round of the playoffs. Brian, last week when we were talking, you said, no, you're not ready to believe until there are championship rings and we have a history of heartbreak. Well, they're not to the championship yet, but it's a pretty good start.
Oh, man, it was super exciting. I mean, this team has been the most fun to watch in my lifetime. And I've been watching the Hawks for probably close to 40 years. Trae Young is just a superstar in the making. I mean, so incredibly fun to watch. And, you know, I fully expect us to have a 3-1 lead in a series, perhaps in a championship game, that we blow. And because we're Atlantans and that's what we do and it's tradition and we believe in tradition here in the South. You know, that said, I am going to watch. I'm going to pull for them. I am, ironically, as we tape, wearing a True Believer Hawks t-shirt.
Which goes back quite a few years. I have one of my own. None of the names on there are on the current squad.
No. And this is a vintage tee. But I would love to see them beat the Philadelphia 76ers. That first game was a blowout. You know, again, almost blew it to the end. But the second game, we should have been blown out and we stayed in it because this is a championship caliber team. We just haven't figured out yet how they will break our hearts, but we know they will.
Theron, I'm wearing an Atlanta Hawks t-shirt also as we tape. This one is a real vintage one. It goes back to the days of Dan Rounfield, if folks can even remember that.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm sorry, guys. I did not get the memo about the Atlanta Hawks shirt. I do have one of those. I do have one of those True Believer shirts, Brian, because I think they were giving them away at the game. So it still fits. So that's actually pretty encouraging.
And there's an accomplishment right there.
I have a Clark Atlanta University alumni shirt on. So shout out to CAU. But no, look, look at what we just heard from our good friend Brian Dennis. You know, I have to tease Brian. You know, he just could not get through his commentary without bringing up old stuff. You know, like, look, Brian, we believe in the city of Atlanta. The Hawks are outstanding. They're playing great basketball. And I think the thing that we got to really also give a shout out to is Nate McMillan, who stepped in through the season to coach the Hawks. I mean, you know, he's a defensive-minded coach. He was an outstanding NBA player when he played in the NBA. And the other thing is, you know, this is really the first time that we've actually seen all these guys healthy. You know, we still have a couple players that have been banged up that are going to come back. But I think what was on display is that once all of these players that were traded and recruited through free agency and do the draft to really build a team around Trae Young, we're seeing that all come together. So I do think we will not only beat the Philadelphia 76ers, I do believe I'm looking forward to going to the Barclays Center where, you know, I'm a big fan of Jay-Z. I know he's part owner of the company. I didn't get a chance to go to Madison Square Garden, which has always been my dream to attend that that arena. But yeah, just big shout out to the Hawks and big shout out to Nate McMillan. I think he deserves a lot of credit.
And that is it for this week's Political Breakfast. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Ryan Robinson is a Republican strategist, communications consultant, and former deputy chief of staff for Governor Nathan Deal. Theron Johnson is a Democratic strategist, a public affairs and government consultant, and most recently a senior advisor to the Biden Georgia campaign. Thanks so much to you both.
Don't go breaking my heart, Hawks.
Thank you, Julio Jones, for 10 great years.
And you can follow us on Twitter. Brian is at Lord Tinsdale. That's T-I-N-S-D-A-L-E. Theron is at Theron Johnson. And I'm at D-E-N-I-S-O-H-A-Y-E-R. Our thanks to Kevin Rinker and Lowell Berlanti for their production assistance. And if you like this show, please do subscribe. It's free wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure to rate us, which is a great way to make sure other people can find us. And check out all the other fantastic podcasts from WABE. Up-to-the-minute information on the coronavirus on Did You Wash Your Hands with Sam Whitehead. A deep dive into the politics and money in one corner of the gun debate. Lisa Hagan brings you No Compromise. And then there's the Peabody Award-winning Buried Truths. Hank Klibanoff unearths details about the murder of Ahmaud Arbery in Brunswick. And here on The Political Breakfast, we will be back in your feed and in your head real soon with more nourishing political conversation. Be sure to join us and have a great and a safe week.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now Plugged In, a WAB politics podcast. New name, same in-depth, on-the-ground reporting from us, WAB politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WAB.org or your favorite podcast platform.